Every magical faction in the city came to it. It would take everyone to fight something like this off. Roman raised his black eyebrows.
And tell them that we're about to get invaded by a dragon?
Yes.
We don't have any evidence, Roman said.
He was right. Yufong was still in a coma. Bo Clayton and his deputies only saw Nag as a human, and the druids wouldn't back me up in public. They barely even came to the conclave. I would need evidence. Something more than visions of fire and carved rocks. At the very least, I had to warn the pack and the people. With those two, my word would be sufficient. I had to call Nick, too.
Let me out here, Roman said. I pulled over. I'll talk to the wolves and the witches, Roman said. But talk is cheap. We need evidence. Witnesses.
I know. Do you believe me that it's a dragon?
Yes, Roman said. I believe you, but not because of the picks and rocks. I believe you because you're you. I don't need to see it. It's enough for me that you believe it's a dragon, but it won't be enough for others.
I know. It will be okay. I doubted that, but nodded anyway.
Don't kill yourself.
Oh, for the love of... Will you stop with that? He shook his finger at me.
Don't do it. I'm watching you.
Get out of my car. I drove straight to Cutting Edge. Nag was right about one thing. He was legend. Over the years, legends became warped. They grew and evolved as they were passed from one generation to the next. Everyone knew that dragons hoarded treasure, lived in mountain caves, breathed fire, and killed their rivals. But how much of that was true was anybody's guess. Was there even a point in trying to research? Most of what Drest had told us was considered to be myth, and it was distorted by Christianity. As Christianity had crept across the Middle East and Europe, the priests had realized that fighting old pagan ideas would doom the new religion. They were too deeply ingrained. So instead, Christianity adopted them, incorporating them into their rites, borrowing everything from Christmas and Easter to the idea of the immortal soul that separated from the physical body at death. Christianity tied the timeline of ancient Ireland to Noah's descendants and the flood. None of it would be helpful in figuring out Nag. I drove into our parking lot and maneuvered the Jeep into the parking space. Mine was the only car. The kids and Curran were gone. I unlocked the door and stepped inside. Over the years, Cutting Edge had become my fortress. Like my house, it was a place where I could take my sword off my back. I unbuckled the sheath and dropped it on my desk. I opened the fridge, took a pitcher of iced tea out, and poured myself a glass. I'd done this hundreds of times before. There was comfort in the ritual, and I needed comfort today, because the dragon had knocked me off my stride. How the hell do you fight a dragon? How large was he exactly? If the carving on the stone was to scale, we were in deep shit. I could just imagine the conversations around the conclave table. So, what evidence do you have of this dragon? Well, there is this overgrown rock in the magic druid camp. You can't see this rock or find this druid camp, but take my word for it.
Ugh.
Someone knocked on my door. Come in, I called. The door swung open. Knight Abettor Norwood stepped through, followed by the two other knights. Just what I needed. I leaned on my elbow. The Holy Trinity. Come in. Don't be shy. Grab a chair.
You're disrespectful, the Hispanic woman told me.
I'm so sorry. I should have used your names. So rude of me. You take the chair on the right. Larry and Moe and Curly can sit over there. The Hispanic woman opened her mouth. Knight Abettor Norwood glanced at her, and she clamped her jaws shut. Right. So there was a script. They weren't sure what I was capable of, and they wanted to find out, so they picked her to bait me.
Bad idea. The knights sat. Please let me introduce my colleagues, Knight Diviner Younger and Knight Striker Cabrera.
My guardian, Greg Feldman, was a knight diviner during his life. They didn't always practice divination. They served as a cross between psychiatrists and priests and possessed a unique ability to read people. They were the order's confessors and the advocates for the individual knights. A night striker was the order's equivalent of a bazooka.
Nice.
Diplomacy and force. The knight abettor had both sides covered. Kate Leonard.
I think we've gotten off on the wrong foot, Norwood said.
How?
The order is interested in ascertaining the state of things in Atlanta.
What does that have to do with me?
You are a power in Atlanta.
He blinked. I'm the power in Atlanta, I told him. I claimed the city as my own.
Wow, Cabrera said. Humble, aren't you?
You came here looking for clarity. I'm clearing things up for you.
What does that mean?
Norwood leaned forward, focusing on me. It means that when something sufficiently large and dangerous threatens the city, like my father trying to invade, I will use Atlanta's magic to protect it.
So Atlanta has personal magic?
Cabrera snorted. I ignored her.
Well, does it? Is Atlanta a person? She pressed.
I don't have the time or the inclination to educate you, I told her. The Mage College is up the street and over the bridge. If you go by there, I'm sure they'll bring you up to speed.
Do you rule Atlanta?
The blonde diviner asked. No.
Why not?
He asked. Atlanta is doing fine on its own without my leadership. We have a democratically elected government, and I have no intention of interfering with it.
If you claimed Atlanta, why don't you stop the crime here?
Cabrera asked. Her eyes were calculating. She was asking leading questions they already knew the answers to. They wanted confirmation that I wasn't omnipotent and omniscient.
Because it's not my responsibility to stop crime. We have a well-funded police department, GBI headquarters, and local sheriff departments, not including a number of private organizations like the Guild, the Red Guard, and, of course, the Order.
But could you stop all crime?
Younger asked. Nobody can stop all crime, Night Diviner. You, of all people, should know that.
Norwood studied me. The Order is interested in forging a relationship of cooperation and mutual understanding.
I already have a relationship of mutual understanding with the Order.
Really?
Norwood asked.
Yes.
Nick thinks I'm fruit from the poisoned tree and hates my family, and I tolerate his assholeness because occasionally I need the Order's help. Nick and I understand each other very well.
We find that people tend to be more productive in a less hostile environment, Norwood said.
I sighed. Okay, so the Order would like to be friendlier. Great. What do you know about dragons?
What?
Cabrera asked. Dragons. Weaknesses, habits, how one might possibly go about killing one.
That information is classified, Norwood said.
And here we are. When it comes down to it, there isn't much you can do, because you have regulations that bind you. You divide your world into humans and non-humans, and your definition of human is so circumscribed, your influence is collapsing. I sympathize. It's hard to fight with your arms tied behind your back, but it's not my problem. You are not my problem unless you make yourself into one.
Cabrera opened her mouth. I didn't wait for her.
Go back to Wolf Trap. Nick and I have a working relationship. It's not perfect, but it doesn't have to be. I don't need him to be my friend. I need him to be manpower on the field when it counts. Nicholas Feldman will be replaced, Norwood said.
That's the order I know, always putting appearances above the welfare of their knights.
What actions will you take if Feldman is removed?
The Night Diviner asked.
I will bar the Order from having a chapter in Atlanta.
You can't do that, Cabrera said.
I can, and I will. I'm tired of your turnover problems. I prefer to work with Nick.
After everything Moynihan put him through, he deserves to have his own chapter. His performance is exemplary. You want to get rid of him because he's politically inconvenient? Go ahead, but don't put lipstick on a pig and pretend it's on my account. If you take him out, I promise you, the new chapter of the Order won't be welcome in Atlanta.
You're a nobody, Cabrera said, biting off words. You're all talk. I can feel your magic. It's nothing.
The phone rang. I held up my hand and picked it up. Kate Leonard.
Conlon escaped, Kern said.
What?
He shifted and ran away from Martha. They are chasing him now, but they're too far behind. He's coming toward you.
Our son was out in the open with Sahanu all around the city. I focused on the magic around me, stretching through the arcane power, drenching the city. Where are you, baby? Where? A bright spark moved through the magic. Conlon. He wasn't far. I grabbed my sword and dashed out the door. The three knights sprinted after me. I ran like I've never run before in my life. Streets flew by. I turned, guided by magic, focused on the brilliant glowing drop of magic. I was almost on top of him. A deserted street lay in front of me. On the left, the shell of a building waited, its first floor all empty brick arches. The entire building lay exposed, its roof gone long ago. The arches at the far end, dark and shadowy. Conlon was in there. Someone had cleared most of the debris, pushing it into a large pile at the far end and a smaller one to the right outside the building. Not a lot of places to hide. I walked to the building. Behind me, the knights rounded the corner.
Conlon, I called. It's Mommy!
A small creature exploded out of the pile and jumped into my arms, shifting in mid-leap into a human baby. I hugged him to me. My heart was beating so fast it was about to jump out of my chest.
Mama! What were you thinking, you little idiot?
I squeezed him to me. Big gray eyes looked at me, wet with tears.
Bad!
He sniffed.
Bad!
Oh, no. Where? Where is the bad thing, Conlon? Show me. He buried his face in my chest. Something moved within the building, deep in the shadowy arches on the other side. The Sahanu had stalked my son. They'd found him and scared him, and he ran across the city to me. They'd scared my son in my domain. Never again. A splash of magic landed within the arches and died. I see you. A vampire landed next to me, smeared in grape-purple sunblock.
We found the Sahanu, it said in Javier's voice. In Shinar, do you require assistance?
A second vamp dropped on my other side.
Yes, I thrust Conlon into Javier's vamp's arms. Protect my child.
The vampire took my son. I grasped the second vamp's mind. The navigator let go. I unsheathed Surratt, dropped the sheath on the ground, and marched into the building, the undead at my heels. The Sahanu waited for me in the arches. I felt them. The damn building had too many holes.
I see you,
my voice spread through the building. Fury boiled inside me, blotting out everything else.
I see all of you.
I yanked the magic to me. Words of power burst from my lips, the pain barely registering. I'd had a lot of practice.
Renar Kayar!
Come to me. Magic ripped from me like a tidal wave. The arches rained Sahanu, my power tearing them out of their hidey holes and throwing them to the ground. I saw familiar faces in that split second. Gust, pale green hair, air magic, twin swords. Carolina, 7 feet tall, brown-skinned, chainmail, hammer, muscles like a champion weightlifter. Arsenic, bright red hair, wrapped in diaphanous cloth like a mummy, poisonous to the touch. 14 Sahanu. They had all come for my son. All except Razor. I sliced the back of my left forearm and slammed the cut against the side of the building. My blood shot out in a hair-thin stream, running along the walls, across the open spaces of the arches, across bricks and holes, until it touched itself, completing the circle. A translucent red wall burst into existence and vanished, the blood ward sealing itself. One of the Sahanu, a lean, dark-haired man, leaped, aiming to escape through one of the arches, and fell back from the ward. The assassins turned toward me. They finally realized the truth. They were trapped in here with me. There is no escape! I crushed the vamp's mind. Its skull exploded. The undead blood surged out of it, obeying my call, mixing with my own.
Don't let her don the armor!
Carolina screamed. They charged me. I vomited a power word.
Oh, Sonda!
They crashed to the ground. Carolina tried to crawl to me, but my magic clamped her down. The mist of undead blood settled over me, flowing, shaped by my will, turning into armor. It coated my arms, my stomach, my back, impenetrable but flexible, the color of a ruby, the color of my blood. The mist congealed on Surratt, forming a blood edge. I felt all my chains fall away. All the breaks were gone. The drained vamp fell next to me. I charged. The first Sahanu tried to counter, and I cut him in half with one swing. Carolina came at me, swinging her hammer. I sidestepped and cut off her arm at the elbow. She screamed, and I added a second mouth across her navel to put her down. A woman stabbed my back with her spear. A jolt of pain ripped through me as the armor absorbed the impact. I spun and beheaded her. Gust dropped from above, driving with his blades. I spat a focused blast of magic at him.
Hey, Sod!
Mine. His mind broke under the pressure like a cracked walnut. He landed, mine, before his feet touched the ground.
Amehey!
I ordered, sending a sharp arrow of power through him. Obey. In front of me, Arsenic spat a power word. I flattened my magic into a shield, and it glanced off.
Kill!
I told Gust. The green-haired Sahanu sprinted at Arsenic, his twin blades raised for the kill. The other assassin twisted out of the way, sprouting spikes on his arms. Gust whirled like a dervish. The spikes pierced him in the same moment he buried his left sword in Arsenic's chest. They sank to the ground together, but I was already moving. The world faded to the vivid precision of battle. Every moment mattered, every step counted. There was no other place like it. This was my calling, this was what I did, and I danced through the battlefield, through the spray of blood and boiling magic, the sword of my grandmother's bones singing a song as it bridged life and death. I cut them to pieces. I disemboweled and maimed. They would never again scare my son. The last Sahanu collapsed. The ground at my feet was bloody. Pieces of human bodies littered it. I turned around. The knights stood on the street, their faces wearing identical expressions. Eyebrows raised, eyes wide open, mouth a tense, half-open slash across the face. Fear. The vampire had frozen, Conlan in its arms. My son was looking straight at me. Damn it, Javier. That wasn't something Conlan should have seen. I had to mitigate it. I dissolved the ward and walked toward them, killing the magic in my blood armor. It crumpled to dust. I walked to him, my magic swirling around me. I had no cloak, and I didn't care. Cabrera and Norwood took a step back. Younger remained, awe on his face. He raised his hand toward me, fingers trembling, and Norwood yanked him back. I raised my arms. Conlan reached for me, and I took my baby from the vamp, my magic spilling freely out of me. Conlan hugged my neck and petted my hair.
Shy!
Oh, how I wished I were shiny and not a killer. A jeep rocketed onto the street, taking the corner too sharply. Another followed, then an SUV, then a truck. The first jeep screeched to a halt, and Martha jumped out of it, moving much faster than a plump woman twice my age should have moved. Six vampires came scuttling over the roof in assorted colors of sunblock, like someone spilled a bag of Skittles. Taste the undead rainbow.
Secure the perimeter,
the lead one barked, landing next to Javier's vampire.
Sit rep.
Beside me, Javier's vamp looked to the left, looked to the right, and unhinged its jaws.
The first generation of the Sahanu is dead. The second generation of the Sahanu is dead. The order of Sahanu is dead. Everybody is dead.
Javier paused.
Praise be to Inshinar, the merciful.
Stop it, I growled at him.
Right,
the team leader said.
Team one leader to mother. 14 bandits down, no pulse, seen hot. The dove and chick are secure. Advise?
The dove? Kate Daniels, the dove? Just when exactly had I ever done anything remotely dove-like? The vamps had spread through the street, taking positions on the buildings.
Roger. Team one, hold position until cleanup complete.
The vamp swiveled to me.
Cleanup crew is on the way, ma'am.
Martha reached me, with George at her heels.
I'm so sorry. We thought he was down for a nap. He shouldn't have been able to open the latch on the window bars.
Oh, but he did. I was mother to the smartest boy alive. I hugged him to me. He was still alive. He could have died. He would have died if Kern hadn't called me to tell me he was missing. It hit me like a ton of bricks. My knees almost gave, and I locked them in place. George wrapped her arm around me.
It's okay, she said. He's alive and safe. It's okay.
She held on to me for another moment and let me go. The cars kept coming, the street filled with female shapeshifters. The ones I recognized were from Clan Heavy. 12. Who are all these people? I asked George.
The book club, she told me.
I pulled my magic back into me. Has anybody heard from Curran?
I called him at the guild when Conlon came up missing, George said.
Ma'am, Javier said, I have a report from the patrols. The guild is under attack. Would you like to assist?
Yes.
Team three, Inshinar request assistance at the guild.
Javier's vamp scuttled away. Martha turned and roared.
Turn around! Everyone back to the cars! My son needs help at the guild!
Clan Heavy ran back to their cars. I turned to the knights.
Help or get out of the way!
Norwood stepped aside, and I ran to the nearest car, Conlon in my arms. Chapter 13. During the guild's remodel, the architect decided to mitigate some of the damage to the building by adding a small balcony to the top floor. Framed by bay French doors, the recessed balcony was tucked away in the north wall, facing the guild parking lot, all but invisible from the ground. The Mercs called it Christopher's Roost. Sometimes at dawn or dusk, he'd come here and stand on the rail, watching the sun before he sprouted his blood-red wings and soared into the air. I liked to come here during the day. I'd brought some plants, nothing fancy, some ivies, bamboo, and pothos, three chairs, and a big beanbag stuffed with sawdust. I sat in my chair now, Conlon asleep on the beanbag, and watched the flurry of activity below. Corpses littered the parking lot. Nag had sent a dozen of his creatures to attack the guild. We pulled into the parking lot in time to see Curran rip the last of them in half. He'd grasped the beast by the neck and the arm and pulled him apart like he was tearing a piece of paper. Now he was below, supervising the cleanup. Biohazard had been called, but there was no telling when they would get there. Meanwhile, the bodies had to be secured, the parking lot salted and disinfected with fire, and the wounded treated. I'd excused myself from all of it. I'd had my fight. Someone walked up the stairs behind me. They moved quietly, but all of my senses were still keyed up, and I recognized the sound. "Hi, Martha." The older woman sat in the chair next to me and handed me a cup of tea. I sipped. It was half honey.
"I am sorry," she said.
"That's okay. He's full of surprises." Martha glanced at me and drank her tea.
"We put him down in his room for a nap."
George loved her nephew so much, she'd set a room aside for him in her house. Every time I saw it, it always cheered me up.
"There is one window in the room," Martha said.
"I know." It was a small window about 5 feet off the ground, secured with a grate of silver bars.
"The grate has a latch," Martha said.
I nodded. Most bedrooms had grates that could be unlocked. Otherwise, the bedroom would become a death trap in a fire.
"A lion cub can't open the latch. It's intricate."
She sipped her tea.
"It requires human dexterity."
Where was she going with this?
"But a shapeshifter child in human form can't hold on to the bars because they have silver that will burn their hands."
She paused. "Uh-huh," I said to say something.
"Conlon opened the latch and escaped. There were claw marks on the wall and claw marks on the latch. He did this very fast. George put him down for a nap, and 15 minutes later, when I came to check on him, he was gone."
That was how he avoided the silver. He turned into his warrior form, climbed up, and worked the latch with his claws.
"Curran didn't tell me everything."
Her voice held a gentle rebuke. "What did he tell you?"
"That my grandson is a shapeshifter, and assassins are hunting him. What else should I know?"
We would need her to watch Conlon. I had to come clean. "He can hold a warrior form," I said. Martha startled.
"The baby?"
"Yes."
"For how long?"
"For however long he wants," I sighed. Martha fell silent. I finished my tea.
"What else can he do?"
she asked softly. "We don't know." I set my cup on the little table between us. "We know he can't control his magic, and it makes him visible to people who can sense it. My father put a price on his head. One of my father's associates was seen bringing a briefcase to the keep. He was escorted by renders. He left without the briefcase. The next day, Robert brought us an offer of friendship and alliance." Martha leaned back.
"Jim will never betray you."
"How can you be sure?"
"Because she'd cut off his balls and feed them to him,"
Desandra said behind me. "What are you doing here?" The Alpha of Clan Wolf stalked into the light and leaned against the wall.
"I was driving by. Saw the spectacle. Thought I'd stop by. What are those furry, foul-smelling dead things in the parking lot?"
"They belong to a guy named Naeg. He's ancient, powerful, and he might be a dragon."
"What does this Naeg want?"
"To conquer the world, and for me to help him against my father. This was a demonstration of his power." Desandra sneered at the parking lot.
"Not exactly impressive. Oh, well, most men have trouble with foreplay."
She had a point. With as much as he'd hyped his demonstration of power, I had expected bigger fireworks.
"Nobody will harm my grandchild," Martha said. "Clan Heavy won't stand for it."
I didn't say anything. Clan Heavy was powerful, but it was only one clan.
"They say a lot of silly things about us wolves."
Desandra studied the polish on her nails. They were long, sharpened to a point, and bright yellow, like the mane of blonde hair falling on her back.
"They say we mate for life, that we have lupin dignity, that we are all stoic and sour. Rubbish. But one thing is true. We forget nothing. We remember our friends and our enemies. If the Beast Lord were to betray his friends, well, he wouldn't be fit to be a leader. If Martha goes for his balls, someone will have to go for his throat."
orange light rolled over to Sandra's eyes. She smiled.
Poor Beast Lord,
she purred.
Why, he wouldn't know where to turn.
A vampire dashed across the parking lot, grape purple. What now? Aiming for the Beast Lady seat, I asked.
If they begged me to take it on bended knee, I wouldn't.
Desandra grinned, baring sharp teeth.
Too much hassle. I'm a single mother. All I want to do is raise my children in peace.
And rule the largest clan with iron claws, I told her.
These are plastic.
Desandra waved her nails at me.
Jim knows what he would face, Martha said. He isn't a fool.
All the same, I don't want Conlon near the keep, and I don't want him at your clan house. Too much risk for everyone.
We will take care of Conlon, Martha said. We'll do it on your street. Don't worry about it.
And Mahon? I asked.
What the old bear doesn't know won't hurt him, Martha said. You do what you need to do,
Desandra said.
We'll do our part.
An undead vaulted over the balcony.
In Shinar!
A desperate note vibrated in Javier's voice. What happened?
Rowena failed to check in. We can't find her or her vampire.
Damn it. I got up and closed my eyes. Magic spread before me. I couldn't find someone I didn't know. I could detect when a significant power breached my borders, but the Sahanu were invisible to me. They didn't have enough power. I didn't know them well, but Rowena was related to me by blood, a bond strengthened by friendship and a vow of loyalty. It was a tenuous connection, but it would have to be enough. The sea of magic waited for me. I had to stir it up. I pulled my power in and released it. The pulse of magic rolled through the city like the toll of a giant silent bell. The floor underneath me shuddered. Pulse. Another pulse. Pulse. There. A faint trail. Something weak. Something small and insignificant, but carrying traces of Rowena's magic. Her vampire. It was on the very edge of my territory, just inside the border, left for me to find. And there was something else. Ancient and scorching, like someone had raked the fabric of the magic with white, hot claws. Nag. I opened my eyes.
Get Gastek, I snarled at Javier. Get your strike teams. Get the bus. Get everyone.
When Teddy Joe carried me into the air, he did it in a contraption he called the sling, and I called an old playground swing. When Christopher carried me, he picked me up like I was a child. It wasn't my favorite way to travel, but I needed speed, and he hurtled through the air like a hawk diving for his prey. We were going southeast toward Panthersville. The city slid under us, so tiny it seemed unreal. How the hell did people get into planes on a regular basis before the shift? I did a lot of things well. Heights and flying weren't among them.
Would you like me to fly lower?
Christopher asked.
No.
What I would have liked was Rowena, safe and sound. I felt as if I were trying to outrun a giant, rolling boulder while more boulders fell on me from every side. Whatever was holding me together was wearing thin, and when it broke, there would be hell to pay. I just had to find Rowena. I had to find her alive, not in a vat of boiling people. The spark of magic was almost directly under us.
We're here,
I told Christopher. His great red wings folded. He went into a dive. Wind tore at me. I shut my eyes. We swooped and miraculously stopped falling. I opened one eye. Christopher stood in a pasture holding me. A copse of magnolia trees, their thick branches twisting up, waited in front of us. The boundary of my territory just yards away beyond the tree line. Christopher set me down carefully. The pasture lay quiet. Insects chirped. Birds sang in the branches, some trilling melody. The heat of summer streamed from a sky so beautifully blue it almost hurt to look at. The weak glow of Rowena's magic was right in front of me. I pulled Surratt out of its sheath and walked forward under the dense canopy. The sound of someone's hoarse breathing echoed through the woods, creepy enough to give me nightmares. A massive tree spread its branches before me. A bloody chain was wrapped around the trunk. I moved forward, carefully, one foot over the other, circling the tree. Step. Another step. The back of the trunk came into view. A dead vampire sagged against the loop of the chain, a massive pike thrust through his heart. Next to it, held in place by the loops of the same chain, a Yetimur sagged against the trunk. Blood stained the fur on its sides where it must have tried to gnaw itself free of the chain. Above them, a single word was clawed into the bark. Kings.
Kings?
Christopher frowned. I turned in the direction the bloodsuckers would have looked if they were still alive. It made sense. Two vampires tore out of the woods and galloped across the pasture, both so old. No sign of upright locomotion remained. They ran on all fours, grotesquely ugly creatures, so warped nobody would have guessed they'd started out as human. Their sunblock, a deep crimson, looked like fresh blood.
"She isn't here,"
the undead said in unison in Gastek's voice, his words sharp enough to cut. "What's Rowena's effective range?"
4.67 miles.
I pushed through the vegetation to the other side.
"Kate!"
he snapped. The underbrush ended. We stood on the apex of a low hill, fields and woods rolling to the horizon. A column of black smoke stabbed at the sky due southeast. "King's Row," I told Gastek. The distant roar of water engines came from the northwest. Kern and the Mercs were catching up. Gastek's bloodsuckers streaked down the hill. Christopher took a running start, swept me up, and flew into the sky. King's Row, population around 1,000, was born from the remnants of a fracturing Decatur. Most of the people gave up trying to fight nature, fueled by magic steroids, and pulled into the city proper. But a few neighborhoods remained, turning into small towns. Chapel Hill, Sterling Forest, and King's Row. They set up their own post offices and water and guard towers and held on to their land. Christopher circled the settlement. King's Row was no more. Nothing remained except for a charred ruin. Black ash hid the ground. Smoke billowed from half a dozen places, greasy and acrid, joining together in a single massive cloud above. Here and there, remnants of the fire smoldered, red veins in the black crust. With a fire, some structures would have been left standing. Fireplaces, brick walls, ruined appliances, burned-out cars. There was nothing. Not even the outline of the streets. Only black ash. He'd taken 1,000 people. I didn't know if they'd died in the fire or if he'd kidnapped them. But they were gone, and Nag was to blame. No more. I needed to get my hands on him now. And what would I do when I did? I didn't even know if a blood ward would hold against that. Christopher took another turn. Something shone through the smoke, a smudged orange glow.
There,
I pointed, but he had already seen it. We dropped through the smoke and landed on the ash. Heat scoured my face. A 12-foot-tall pillar rose in the middle of the ravaged field, a translucent column dusted with ash. Within it, an orange glowing liquid flowed. Glass, I realized. The pillar was glass, its outer crust solid, but inside it was molten. Christopher made a choking sound. I looked up. There was a human being in the pillar. Oh, dear God. The body was encased in glass up to the shoulders. The head and neck were free, smudged with soot, all the hair burned off. But the body itself floated, submerged in molten glass. It wasn't burned. The molten glass should have boiled the flesh off the bones, but I could see pale legs dangling in the glowing liquid. What the bloody fuck? The head opened its eyes. Still alive? How? The dry, cracked lips moved.
Heh!
Gastek's vampire slid to a stop next to me and froze.
Heh!
The person in the glass said.
Help!
Rowena. Every hair on my arms stood on end. I concentrated on the pillar, pulling magic inside me to shine at it like a light. I couldn't see it the way Julie did, but I felt the veins of glowing power twisting into the pillar in a complicated web. Inside, Rowena was coated in it, as if she wore a skin-tight bodysuit. The web cradled her, winding through every inch of the pillar. The whole thing was bound together. Shit. Gastek's left vamp charged to the glass column.
No!
I yelled. It turned to me. If you break the glass, she'll burn to death.
Are you sure?
Gastek asked, his voice clipped.
Yes!
A jeep rounded the bend of the road. Julie and Derek jumped out and ran toward us.
Can we drain it from the bottom?
Christopher asked. She's wrapped in a spell. It's clinging to her like a second skin. The skin is connected to the pillar. We break any part of it, she'll die instantly. The vamp spun around.
Get her out of there!
Gastek's voice vibrated with steel.
Kate!
Quiet! If we broke the pillar, she died. If we tried to lift her out of it, she died. If Tech hit, she died. Vampires dashed out of the woods on the northern edge of the town, the people catching up with Gastek. Julie reached me, looked up at the pillar, and clamped her hand over her mouth. What do I do? The awful sound of groaning wood rolled through the air. I turned. On the south side, the trees shuddered. Green branches twisted and dropped. Something had snapped the decades-old pines like toothpicks. Something huge. The druid carving flashed before me. I pulled Surratt from its sheath.
Form on Inshinar!
Gastek snapped. The undead lined up into a wedge behind me. An oak split, spun on its trunk, and plummeted down. A massive snout emerged into the light, 6 feet across. An enormous head followed, shaggy with brown fur. Two curved tusks, big enough to skewer a car, flanked the snout, followed by three pairs of shorter tusks. Short spiked horns protruded from the beast's skull. Well, of course, that's what this party was missing, an enormous pissed-off pig. Fuck me. Behind me, the guild jeeps tore around the bend of the road and sped across the burned ground, raising a cloud of ash. The colossal boar took a step forward. Ragged gashes crossed its hide, cutting through a network of faded scars. Here and there, spiked balls punctured its hide, half sunken into its flesh. Someone had tortured this boar. The beast swung its head toward me. A broken chain dangled around its neck, as thick as a lightning pole. At its end hung a huge metal symbol. Nag's shackles.
It's a god! Julie took a step back. Its magic is silver.
I hold God's prisoner, tormenting them for my pleasure. Nag had captured a god, kept him prisoner for 1,000 years, tortured him, and now he'd loosed him on us. There would have been only one boar god on the British Isles for Nag to capture. It's Machus, I said. The Celtic boar, guardian of hunters and warriors, the Caledonian monster. A god, or rather its manifestation. Killing it wouldn't kill the deity, but it would banish it from our reality. A tech shift would rip him out of existence instantly. It would also kill Rowena.
Does it have any weaknesses?
Gastek asked.
No.
The boar opened its mouth and roared. The bellow slapped my eardrums, a mad blast of rage. It reverberated through the burned-out town. Ash trembled. just what we needed. Marcus pawed the ground. Another bellow smashed into us. The bloodsuckers waited, unmoving. Nothing I had would deliver a punch strong enough to one-shot him. We'd have to bleed Marcus. It would take hours. We didn't have time to fight him. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw three guild jeeps barreling down the road toward us. They went off the pavement and tore through the scarred town, raising clouds of ash. "We have to kill it fast," I said.
"Fast isn't an option," Christopher answered, his voice detached. "He's too large, and he is a god. He will regenerate."
"We have to try. Rowena doesn't have time." Maka sighted us. His deep-set eyes ignited with fury. The boar was finally free from confinement, free to punish. Nag had driven him mad.
"Protocol giant," Gastek said, his voice calm. "Prioritize damage over undead casualties."
"You don't owe me anything," Rowena whispered from the pillar. "Go. Leave."
Maka started forward. "Here we go." I pulled magic to myself. The leading jeep slid to a halt. A single man jumped out and sprinted to the boar. I would know that sprint anywhere.
"Hi, honey, we're over here, but please ignore us and run at the magic boar all by yourself. It's only a giant, enraged animal god. No need to worry. Nothing bad ever happens in situations like this."
"Curran!"
He ran past us at breakneck speed, as if we weren't even there. "Damn it," I unsheathed Surratt.
"Idiot," Gastek volunteered.
Marcus bellowed, giving voice to pain and insane anger, and broke into a full charge. The ground punched my feet, and I stumbled to keep balance. The boar charged toward Curran like a runaway train. I broke into a sprint. He'd need backup. The undead followed me. My husband jumped. His human skin tore. Magic punched me like the first ray of sunrise coming over the horizon. Fur spilled out, a whole cloud of it, black and huge. A colossal lion smashed into the boar. I blinked. No, the giant lion was still there. What the hell? What in the bloody... How? He was as big as Marcus. Solid black, a majestic mane floating in the wind, sparking with streaks of magic. What? The lion opened his jaws, fangs glinting in the sun, and plunged them into Marcus's neck. The boar and the lion rolled. The ground trembled.
"Kate!"
The two colossal creatures snarled and roared, trying to bite and gore each other. How was this possible?
"Kate!"
I realized I was standing still. My vampire army had come to a halt.
"Rowena!"
Gastek's vamps screamed in my face. Rowena was my friend. Rowena had held Conlan just yesterday, and today she could burn to death. I couldn't let her die. I knew exactly what I had to do. I just had to do it. It was that, or she would be boiled alive. A clump of dirt the size of a truck flew past me. I ducked and spun back to the pillar.
"Get wood! As much as you can! We need a fire! A huge fire!"
The vampire spun around. There was nothing to burn except for the distant trees. That would take too long.
"Does it have to be wood?"
Gastek asked through his twin vamps. "No, as long as it burns. We need a big flame." The mercs had piled out of the jeeps and stared at the battle raging only a few feet away. Barabbas was on the front line. I caught a glimpse of his face, touched with awe. I couldn't think about it. I couldn't afford to process it now. There was no time. I turned to Rowena. She stared at me.
"Leave me,"
she said, her voice breaking.
"Not gonna happen." "You have Conlan."
"Conlan will be fine. I will be fine. You will be fine. Everything will be fine." I would go to hell for making promises like this. An armored bus emerged from behind the curve of the road and headed for us, the People's Mobile HQ. It sped to us and came to a stop. The doors swung open and Gastek stepped out, followed by two Masters of the Dead and a dozen journeymen. I recognized familiar faces. Kim, Sean, Javier.
We'll burn the bus,
Gastek said over the snarls. The undead attacked the bus, pulling the reserve gasoline containers out of the back and dousing the vehicle with it. The two giant animals were still fighting. It took everything I had to not run over there and help. One of Gastek's undead grabbed him, wrapping its arms around his legs. The second picked up the first and raised Gastek to the pillar. He raised his hand to her cheek. His fingers stopped just short of touching.
Let me go, Rowena told him. Never,
he said.
Ready,
Javier told me.
Carlos,
I called. A short murk turned toward me. I pointed to the gutted bus.
Torch it!
Carlos leaned back and flexed, bringing his arms together as if he were squeezing an invisible basketball. A spark burst into existence between his spread fingers and spun, growing, twisting, turning into a flame, first reddish, then orange, then white. His hands shuddered. He grunted and launched the fireball at the bus. The more of yourself you give to the fire, the louder the call will be. The armored vehicle exploded. I reopened the cut on my arm and thrust it into the fire. Heat cooked my skin. My blood boiled into the flames, turning them red. Pain hit me, and I sent it into the blaze with my magic, opening a pathway across thousands of miles. The fire roared, bloody, and I screamed into its depths.
Father!
The blaze snapped. A glowing silk curtain pulled suddenly taut, and my father appeared within the flames, eyes blazing with power.
What?
I pulled my arm out of the fire and cradled it. It hurt. God, it hurt.
Help me!
He stared at me. He chose his own age, sometimes young, sometimes older. Today he wore the face I knew, a man in his late 50s, full head of hair, wise, handsome face that could have belonged to a teacher, a prophet, or a king. He'd let himself age like this because he wanted to look like a man who could have fathered me. He had still kept it, even 2 years later.
Please help me!
You are asking me for help? Why should I help you, Shareem?
My father was proudest of me when I managed to beat him. Weakness and begging wouldn't work. I had to be smart about this.
Do you remember the ashes of Tyre?
He looked behind me. His gaze swept over the grave of King's Row and halted on Rowena inside the pillar. A muscle in his face jerked. Something sparked within his gaze. He buried it before I could pin it down. What I said next would determine if Rowena lived or died.
He says you killed his brother,
I said.
This is a demonstration of his power. He doesn't think our family can match it.
The flames went out. The bus lay before me, suddenly cold. My arm hurt. It hadn't worked. He'd abandoned me. I'd banked on his pride and lost. I turned away. A draft touched my cheek. Next to me, Roland lowered the hood of his plain brown robe and looked at the pillar. The undead scattered. Gastek stood alone by the pillar, his chin raised, his eyes defiant. The rest of the people huddled in a clump to my right, putting me between themselves and my father.
Have you thought of a solution?
He asked, as if he'd just given me a complex mathematical problem and was curious if I could solve it. I can take control of the pillar, but that will require breaching it, and any breach will break the protective envelope around her. If I attempt to claim the protective envelope around her as my own, it may disintegrate and she'll die. He nodded, his handsome profile slightly curious.
Continue.
My best option is to freeze her into stasis with the spell of Kyre, while I claim the land. The spell of Kyre would hold her separate from our reality. I wouldn't be able to hold it for longer than an instant either. I didn't have enough practice. Claiming would allow me to instantly disintegrate the pillar before it burns her, but claiming is a two-step process, the initial pulse that disperses from me to the boundary and the return pulse that travels from the boundary back to me. In the space between the two pulses, I'm powerless. The spell of Kyre requires a constant flow of magic from the mage. It will collapse. The first pulse of claiming will disrupt the magic net that's keeping her alive right now. If she's out of stasis between the two pulses, she'll burn to death. And I had just told him that Era was teaching me. I would worry about it later. My father crouched and picked up a handful of ash.
When their kind scorched the land, they wounded it. Are you prepared for what will follow if you claim it?
I had no idea what would follow. Yes, my father nodded.
3 seconds, that is all you have.
3 seconds was an eternity longer than I would have lasted. It had to be enough. I had only generated a powerful claiming pulse once, and I'd required a tower to do it. Era had been having me practice claiming small chunks of land, a couple of feet here and there, and then letting them go, and it required a lot of preparation. All I needed was a 20-yard circle around the pillar. That would contain any veins of magic stretching from the pillar. I could do this. I just needed an anchor. Claiming required an anchor, whether it was a tower or a nail thrust into the ground. I needed a conduit for my power. I didn't have anything. Wait, I had my sword. I grasped Surratt with my left hand and knelt, holding it straight up. Slowly, deliberately, putting one foot in front of the other, Gastek walked away from the pillar to the group of people waiting on the side. My father raised his hands. Light stabbed from them. Words, ancient and beautiful, poured out of his mouth, moving the magic itself. It was beautiful. It was poetry and music wrapped into a song of pure power. I stabbed Surratt into the ground and fed every drop of me into it. A pulse tore out of me, a crimson wave of light rolling through the land. There was a pause, a single heartbeat that lasted for an eternity. Silence met me, and then, in the distance, I heard a noise, like a tornado coming from far away. It grew, deafening, overpowering, and slammed into me, jerking me off my feet. I hovered 3 feet above King's Row. My skin turned to ash. Flames burst inside me, incinerating me. My body burned. Naeg had drained the land of its magic to make the pillar. It needed magic to survive, and it was taking mine. It was pulling the magic out of my veins. The agony drowned me. It hurt. It hurt so much. The land would consume me. Rowena. Through the bloody haze covering my eyes, I reached toward the smudge of magic burning in my mind and struck the pillar. My vision cleared for an agonizing moment, suddenly razor sharp, and I saw Curran lock his huge fangs on the back of Moccasus's neck and bite through it. The great boar gasped and went limp, finally at peace. The pillar shattered, the molten liquid spilling, each drop turning into a perfect globe of glass suffused with stolen magic. "Don't panic," Era's cool voice reminded me from my memory. The glass was mine. I crunched the droplets with my power. They broke as one, then again and again, raining down in a glittering waterfall, and I crunched them again and again, feeding their magic back into the land, while a crystal rain fell onto the soil, slipping into the earth. The wailing lessened, then grew quiet, then turned to a whimper, a whisper, and finally vanished. I fell on the ground, landing badly on my side, and blinked. My hands weren't charred, not even my left, which I'd stuck into the fire. I sat up. A perfect circle spread around the pillar, green with fresh grass. A familiar aroma filled the area. It smelled like spice and honey. Delicate flowers had sprouted all around me, small white stars with black centers. I had made them once before, when I'd cried during a flare, because a man who served Morrigan had died. I cared for him, and I had tried to keep him alive, but in the end, I'd had to let him go. Rowena lay on the ground next to me, naked but unburned.